And good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Before we get started today, just want to thank everybody for your great support in our fall membership campaign. We are very, very grateful for your interest and attention to our work and for your wonderful support. We heard from so many people, and we just really, really appreciate it. So thanks. You know, today we're going to talk about historically black colleges and universities in the United States. There are about 107 HBCUs in America. Many were established to educate African Americans following the Civil War and continued to prosper during an era when white institutions refused to admit black students. At one point, HBCUs were responsible for educating 80% of black college grads. When the Civil Rights Act of 1964 was signed, it opened the doors for students of color to attend predominantly white colleges, and HBCU enrollment declined. But now, many HBCUs are seeing a surge in enrollment, and experts say that the Black Lives Matter movement could be the inspiration. Both of Baltimore's HBCUs, Coppin State University and Morgan State University, are seeing enrollment spikes. Dr. David Wilson is the president of Morgan State University. Dr. Michael Freeman is the vice president for enrollment management and student affairs. They both join me in the studio. Gentlemen, welcome. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Tom.
Glad you're here. Professor Mary Beth Gassman joins us on the line from New York. She's a professor of higher education and the director of the Penn Center for Minority Serving Institutions at the University of Pennsylvania. Professor Gassman, thank you for your time today as well.
Oh, thank you. It's a pleasure.
So let me start with you, Dr. Gassman. What are the national enrollment trends? You study this quite closely, but when it comes to HBCUs across the country, what are we seeing?
Well, we're definitely seeing a spike in enrollment. So what we did at our center is we pulled the data from the National Center for Educational Statistics, and we found that nearly 38% of HBCUs were reporting a 10% increase at least in undergraduate student enrollment, and that was for fall 2013 and 2014, which those are the latest national numbers. But we've also been looking at 2015 and 2016, which are not publicly available, but just tracking the number of HBCUs talking about their increases in enrollment. And what I've found is out of the larger group of HBCUs this year, we've seen 43 HBCUs have significant spikes in enrollment, and some of them are really remarkable in the 30%, 40%, even a 50% spike in enrollment. And so you're definitely seeing African-American students walking towards HBCUs.
Is there any indication in the early look into these numbers that there is a specific reason for the spike?
Well, so it's fairly difficult to study that yet, but here's what I'll tell you, what I've noticed. And someone could argue that this is anecdotal, but it's a lot of anecdote. And a lot of anecdote is data, as far as I'm concerned. So a couple of things. If you take a look across social media, various sites where African-American students are talking, be they high school students or college students, one of the things you're seeing, and I see this, I'm very active on social media, and one of the things I'm seeing is a lot of conversation about, I'm so glad I chose an HBCU. I feel safe. I feel supported here. So I'm seeing that over and over and over again. I also am seeing, and this is the first time I've seen this in a while, normally every year I get contacted by maybe two or three African-American parents, and yes, they do contact a professor, which is odd, and they'll say, which HBCU do you think my student would do well at, right? But this year I've already had nearly 70, and I've been keeping track of them, 70 parents, over the summer contacted me and said, listen, I was going to tell my young student to go to a predominantly white institution, but I really think that there need to be some HBCUs in the mix given what's going on. And so, you know, normally what I do is I talk about all the different options within HBCUs with parents and you know, really how to evaluate institutions. So that's a big uptick for me. And then, you know, the other thing that I am seeing, and I'm seeing young African Americans at majority institutions across the country who often will reach out to me because of the work that I do, saying to me, you know, I'm not feeling comfortable at my institution. I don't know where to go. I don't know who to reach out to. And many of them have said, I think I should have gone to an HBCU. And the last thing I'll say is that so many students, I think sometimes people don't realize that all these things happening across the country, they are weighing so heavily on students. It's difficult to learn in an environment when, you know, people who look like you are being assaulted. And so an HBCU has this wonderful, supportive, family-like environment that I think African-American students are craving right now.
So, Mike Freeman, you're the Vice President for Enrollment Management and Academic Affairs at Coppin State. Is this what you're hearing from your students? Are you hearing what Professor Gassman is telling us that they're telling her?
I think there are a variety of things. That's probably one that's probably related to that. But I think I always sort of back up and place it in a historical context that students don't come to campus feeling that. They have that feeling long before they get to campus. And so from a historically black campus context, students have always sought out these institutions in large measure for peace because there is that family feel for the development of confidence. I also wouldn't place too much on that given the demographic shifts that everybody knows that's going on now.
And what are those?
Increasing numbers of black and brown within the United States. And
so just the pool is bigger.
I think the pool is bigger. Mm-hmm. And I think that for students in the inner city in particular and first-generation college students, they are looking for a place where someone's going to understand their particular situation and address those issues as best they can. And I think HBCUs have done that job for years, not just for black students, but for any student.
Mm-hmm. And well, at Coppin State University, for example, what were your freshman numbers last year and what are they this year? What kind of increase are we talking about?
We are still sanitizing our numbers at this point. I can tell you that our first year class will be 50% plus higher than last year.
50%?
Yes.
That's big.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, but accurate numbers, our institutional research together with the registrar's office, we're still working through those final numbers and we'll publish those once they come out. Mm-hmm. But Dr. Gassman is seeing, there is quite a bit of an increase.
Yeah, and David Wilson, same situation over at Morgan?
Yeah, I do think we're seeing something similar in Morgan. Let me, first of all, thank Professor Mary Beth Gassman and her great work at the Center for Minority Serving Institutions at Penn. She's really devoted a lot of energy and attention to some of these issues and is able to come forward with data that is highly credible. And so we depend on that and we appreciate it. In terms of Morgan, we have seen a 31% increase in our new freshmen from 2013 to 2015. To put that in perspective, we were attracting somewhere around 900 or so new freshmen in 2013. And so in 2015, we have almost 1,200 or so. And so we spent a lot of time in conversation with the new students who arrive at Morgan, as well as the students who've been there for a while, trying to understand, well, why did you select us? And I do think that what Professor Gassman has shared with us is some of what we're hearing. The students want affirmation. You know, they want an institution that is basically saying to them, without really being Pollyannish in any way, that our lives have always mattered. And they want the culture of institutions to reflect that. And so this notion of a safe space where they're not just the only black student in the class. They see professors who look like them, who care about them, who at the top of their game is real. And I think certainly that is a portion of what is driving the enrollment and the retention efforts at Morgan.
And Mary Beth Gassman, is there any evidence that, you know, as Dr. Freeman was saying, first of all, there's a larger pool of people of color applying to schools, but also, obviously, in 2008, 2009, we were in a recession. There were a lot of folks that found college affordability to be a huge challenge. So, you know, obviously, we have a little upswing for that as the economy has improved. I mean, are there ways of attributing particular factors at this point? I mean, Trayvon Martin was killed in 2012. That animated the Black Lives Matter movement. Michael Brown was killed in 2014. Of course, here in Baltimore, Freddie Gray in 2015. And unfortunately, there's a long, long list of others who have met the same fate for various reasons. Is there a way of pinning those two things together, the upsurge in enrollment at HBCUs and these and the Black Lives Matter movement?
Yeah, I think there's quite a bit of evidence. I want to say a couple things. So, you know, the pool, there are definitely more students. There are more young people going to college. But one thing to keep in mind is that the growth in that population, it's not African Americans. It's Latinos and Asian Americans. And so you're seeing an uptick, even at HBCUs, in Latinos and Asian Americans. You know, African Americans are tending not to have as many children like white families, but Asian American and Latinos still have large families. So that growth in that in the overall population, there is some that can be attributed to African Americans, but it tends to be growth in African Americans and Latinos. So the other thing that I would say is that during recessions, people go back to college. Okay, so most colleges will, because they lose their jobs and they end up trying to retool and go back to college. So that's normally what happens. And when we were during the middle of that recession, colleges around the country were saying, wow, we're seeing increases in enrollment. What's going on? And you know, I'm a historian, so one of the things I told even my dean is, well, if you're a historian, you know that every time you have a downswing in the economy, you have an upswing in enrollments. And so I think that the increase is not attributable to either of those things. I really do believe that, and we're going to start interviewing. We've already started, you know, thinking about how we're going to interview students. But I think what we're going to find, and I have heard it all across the nation, is we're going to find that students are looking toward black colleges because of what they know they have to offer. And even those parents who in the past might have said, maybe you should go to a majority institution, even though their families had gone to black colleges, are thinking, maybe we should look at black colleges again. And, you know, I want to commend David Wilson at Morgan, because one of the things I saw recently on social media is that on his campus, there's a big billboard that says, Morgan State University, where black lives have always mattered. And, you know, I would love to see universities all across the country do that. I mean, that's leadership. That's amazing leadership. And if I were African American and I saw a sign like that, as a parent, as a student, I would want to go to that institution because I would know that I mattered every day.
Mary Beth Gassman is on the line with us from New York. She's a professor of higher education and the director of the Penn Center for Minority-Serving Institutions at the University of Pennsylvania. Dr. Michael Freeman is with me here in the studio. He's the Vice President for Enrollment Management and Academic Affairs at Coppin State University. Dr. David Wilson is here as well. He is the President of Morgan State University. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll have more on HBCUs with Dr. David Wilson, Dr. Michael Freeman, and Mary Beth Gassman from UPenn. You can join the conversation. Give us a call at 410-662-8780. Or send us an email, midday@wipr.org, or you can drop us a tweet @MiddayTomHall. It's Midday Friday. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us. And welcome back. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Looking ahead on the program coming up on Midday Monday, veteran journalist John Judis on his latest book, The Populist Explosion. From Huey Long to George Wallace and Donald Trump, Judis studies the reasons behind the populist movement on the right and the left and why they are exploding in both the U.S. and Europe. And coming up a little later today, we'll have some live music here in our studio. The gypsy jazz group Hot Club Baltimore will stop by and play a few tunes in the style of Django Reinhardt. And tomorrow, they will be appearing at the first ever Baltimore Jazz Fest in Druid Hill Park. But now we turn once again to the subject of HBCUs and the upsurge in enrollment that they're enjoying, which may be related to the Black Lives Matter movement and the consciousness raising that's taken place among young African-American students as our country witnesses a steady stream of troubling encounters between people of color and law enforcement. So many of those encounters have ended up in death for African-Americans, which have been captured on civilian and police video. So is there a connection between these high-profile incidents and increased enrollment at historically black colleges and universities? Joining me in the studio, Dr. David Wilson, the president of Morgan State University, and Dr. Michael Freeman, the vice president of enrollment and academic affairs at Coppin State University. Dr. Mary Beth Gassman of the University of Pennsylvania is a professor of higher education and the director of the Penn Center for Minority Serving Institutions. She's on the phone from New York. Maryland is home to four HBCUs, including the University of Maryland Eastern Shore and Bowie State University. Enrollment is down a little at UM Eastern Shore, but like other HBCUs across the country, enrollment is up at Bowie State. This semester, Bowie State welcomed its largest freshman class ever, 967 students. That's a 63% jump from the previous year. We'd love to hear from you this afternoon with your questions and comments about HBCUs. You can give us a call, 410-662-8780. You can drop us an email, midday@wypr.org, or drop us a tweet, @MiddayTomHall. So, Dr. Freeman, one of the things that the kids point to when they choose an HBCU is the prevalence of African-American faculty or people of color on the faculty. Are people telling you that that's one of the main reasons that they do? Because this is something that predominantly white institutions, PWIs, as we call them in the biz, do struggle with. What percentage of your faculty is of color, for example? Do you know that off the top of your head?
I don't know it off the top of my head. But it is overwhelmingly African American on the campus. But it's the connection that they develop with the faculty member in the classroom, but also outside the classroom. It extends to those administrators and staff on campus that support them in many, many different ways. And our population is different even than a lot of other campuses where we have a lot of non-traditional students on the campus that need additional support and support in different ways. And so our students over and over again talk about the Coppin family and the feel that they have when they're on the campus and the thrill that they have when they move toward graduation and commencement and reach that achievement of getting a bachelor's degree.
Our producer, Bridget Armstrong, spoke with Rigel Moore. She's a senior psychology major at Coppin State, and she talked about an HBCU's unique ability to provide community and support for African-American students, particularly after traumatic events like, you know, last year's uprising following the death of Freddie Gray. So we're having a little bit of trouble having that clip from Rigel Moore, but basically she says, you know, we're right on North Avenue, which is right, you know, just a few blocks away from where the uprising happened. But there were rallies, there were peace walks, they were out in the community. I mean, they were connected, and Dr. David Wilson, the kids at Morgan were certainly very connected with the community during that uprising as well, during and afterwards.
Yes, I was very, very proud of the students at Morgan. They were out in our community, offering a hand to not only just help clean up our city after those unfortunate incidents, but also they were offering rides to youngsters who were caught out in the streets and could not get home. And so our students at Morgan, they come from a very long history at Morgan of students being involved in the whole movement for justice in this country. Indeed, the college sit-in movement actually started at Morgan. And so we'd like to carry forward that tradition and say to our students, it's very important for you to not just gain from the textbooks in the classroom the skills that you need to be successful out in the world, but you need to bring our communities along with you. And we're very pleased when we see that.
Yeah, and Dr. Gassman, you study minority-serving institutions. A gentleman named Dr. Kimbrough wrote a piece in a journal a few weeks ago talking about the struggles that white institutions have with diversity, and he says that hiring a chief diversity officer is not the answer. The president is the chief diversity officer. You wrote a very provocative piece in the Post just earlier this week about the reasons that predominantly white institutions don't have more people of color on their faculty. What do you think those reasons are?
Well, I agree with Walter on almost everything. So I would say that he's absolutely right that the president needs to be the chief diversity officer, and that if it doesn't come from the president all the way down, then it just doesn't work. And what I wrote about, I'm at a majority institution. I've worked at many majority institutions, and what I wrote about is the ways that faculty in particular try to limit diversity on the faculty. And I referred to the wonderful diversity at historically black colleges, because historically black colleges and other minority serving institutions have the most diverse faculty in the country, and way more diverse than any majority institutions. And what I said in the essay is I gave all the reasons, and it has to do with using issues of quality and pointing to who you were mentored by and where you went to school, and being very discriminatory in who is valued. I also talked a lot about the different ways that people tell people they don't fit in, and the ways that people will build bridges and knock down walls to hire white faculty but are never willing to make any exceptions for faculty of color. I basically told a lot of the secrets, and these are things that I have seen for a while, and felt that they, in this climate, they absolutely needed to be out there. I talk about them quite often, but I decided to put them all in one essay. And one of the things that I've been trying to get people to do is to look at HBCUs and other minority-serving institutions as leaders in really teaching us what we need to know about educating a diverse nation, and also about retaining and attracting faculty of color. Because our minority-serving institutions, the 600 of them across the country, they are so good at it comparatively, and there's so much we could learn. And I think for too long, majority institutions have thought that they have all the answers, and they don't. They are not prepared for this diverse nation that we have, and they need to seek some help.
Dr. Wilson?
Well, we have at Morgan one of the more diverse faculties, certainly in the state, and I would say one of the more diverse faculties in the country. About 35% of our faculty is African-American, about 35% or 40% white, and then we have about 20-25% international, 2-3% Hispanic. My entire career before I came to Morgan was at predominantly white institutions, the type of institutions of which Professor Gassman is speaking. And I was in very high positions there, the chancellor of 13 institutions in the state of Wisconsin, and then vice president at Auburn. And so I think what I saw there, in response also to what Walter wrote in the Post, was exactly this issue, which is there seems to be a level of thought within those institutions that it's incompatible to have high quality and diversity. That there must be some dumbing down or something if you have too many individuals on the faculty or even in the student body, who are not in the majority of the culture of that institution. And so at Morgan, I think the faculty that we have there is one that takes a backseat to no one. It's a high-quality faculty. It's a faculty that is very, very passionate about the work that they do. They're very devoted to students. They do their research. And quite frankly, having come out of that environment a little bit, I often said to my colleagues at Morgan in the first year or so, I had to go through a period there where I had to basically say what I've gained over here is not really appropriate for me to bring to what I'm seeing at Morgan, because I found myself.
The whole thing was flipped.
Huh? It was flipped. It was absolutely flipped. And so I think you have to understand that. Otherwise, you can be imbued with some kind of perspectives. And when you're in those cultures, that when you go to a predominantly black institution, you need to be careful about. So in this area, I do think students are saying They, once again, want to be in an environment that you have a diverse faculty, you have a diverse student population, and you have individuals who look like they look and who care about them.
Dr. David Wilson from Morgan State University, Dr. Michael Freeman from Coppin State University, they're here with me in the studio. Dr. Mary Beth Gassman from the University of Pennsylvania is on the line from New York. I am swimming in doctors today. And Kim is on the line from Baltimore. Kim, you are an HBCU graduate. Welcome to Midday.
Both went to HBCUs, and my brother went to an HBCU, and it was important to me because that's the only time that you're going to be around so many people of color that are have a common goal. We're all trying to get educated. We're all trying to give back. So I just wanted to call in to say that if you have the opportunity to go to HBCU, you should definitely do it because, honestly, you have the rest of your life to spend time with other nationalities, but HBCU time is the only time you can really spend with a whole lot of black people, to put it bluntly.
Sure, sure. And where did you go to school, Kim?
I went to Florida A&M University in Tallahassee, Florida.
All right. Just shout out to Florida A&M. Well, thanks for the call, Kim. Appreciate it. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Dr. Michael Freeman, let me get your reaction to a piece that ran on a website called Blavity.com by a young woman named Cecily Bowen. And she writes that she said, I went to a PWI, in other words, a predominantly white institution, and I still had a black college experience. And she says that there are so many black students at that particular institution that there were actually more black students than she would have encountered had she gone to a smaller school that was historically black. And she's basically making the argument that a lot of folks make that says, you know, you're in a bubble if you're in an HBCU. It's not like the real world. So you're better off going to college in a place that more accurately reflects the actual, you know, racial makeup of the world at large. What do you tell your kids at Coppin when they bring that up, if they bring that up?
It's not the same. And I can share with you that most of my experience has been at PWIs as well. And having worked at the University of Iowa, Johns Hopkins University, and the University of Maryland here, and I've had experience at two now HBCUs, it's not the same. The fiber of an HBCU is rooted in the culture. It's rooted in the history. It's different. The same way President Wilson was referring to making an adjustment coming from a PWI, because the entire rhythm of the institution is different, the way that we interact, the manner that we interact. And then to see individuals from the president all the way down to, say, those that are in housekeeping, and the pride that the folks in housekeeping or in grounds or in safety, it simply isn't the same. The kind of support that you get, the kind of mentoring that you get, the kind of reinforcement that you get, particularly students when they begin to struggle and they think that they may want to stop out and leave, or even if they do stop out and leave, there is this notion of, we'll welcome you back and bring you back, and we'll make sure you're nurtured so that you get that degree.
Yeah, Dr. Wilson, let's talk about that, the graduation rates at Morgan and at Coppin. What kind of graduation rates are you having at Morgan, you know, within that 4 to 6 year period for a college education? Obviously, there's a whole lot of reasons for people to stay in school, drop out of school. I mean, it's a complex situation. But where do you stand over at Morgan?
Well, certainly we're not where we want to be. We're not where we were. We have unveiled an initiative at Morgan called 50 by 25. Of course, our goal is to have a 50% graduation rate in terms of the way that is counted by IPEDS within the next 7 years or so.
And nationally, I guess HBCUs on average have about a 30% range of graduations from what I'm told.
That's correct. But I often say you have to really know what you're looking at when you're looking at the graduation rate. Quite a few of us in higher education across all of the national associations now are basically saying the IPEDS rate, that rate that you just spoke about.
So IPEDS, what does that mean?
That's the way the feds, the federal government, actually is counting the graduation.
That's how they calculate
graduation. It's a very traditional group of students. Those 18 to 22-year-olds, the 18-year-olds who enter your institution in the fall and graduate 4 to 6 years. But only about 65 to 70% of all students in higher education today actually meet that profile. only about 30% are meeting this traditional profile. And so the great majority
across
of students,
the board.
Across yeah. the board in higher ed. So about 70% of the students in higher education are never counted in a graduation rate. And so we think that that rate is not appropriate for the way we should be looking at college completion and college outcomes.
And Dr. Gassman, you've done some work on this in this area. What's your take on the graduation rates and the prospects for the graduation rates at HBCUs to continue to improve?
Well, the one thing I wanted to say is that these rates are, the averages are always changing. So it's actually at about 37% right now. So it's a little bit better than we might think. One thing, and I completely agree with David, that the graduation rates, you know, they're really tricky because they don't take into account the diversity of students that we have across the nation. I mean, these are ways of evaluating student performance and institutions based on antiquated understandings of the diversity of our country. So, you know, this is we're still thinking about college students, the majority them as being 18 to 22. And as David just mentioned, the majority of college students are not there. They stop out and stop in. They are transfer. Many are part-time. They many students will, you know, go to one institution and then pick up at another. And because life happens, and life is very different than it was when we only had, you know, basically middle to affluent white men or women going to college. I mean, it's just much, much different. And so, I think that all institutions should be evaluated using a whole variety of metrics, way beyond retention and graduation. That said, I do think it's important for all of us to have higher graduation rates. I mean, the average in the country is only 56%. So all institutions need to be having higher graduation rates. However, one thing I want to say is that we can't go after HBCUs in particular for this with a heavy hand, because HBCUs, what they do is that they enroll many, many more low-income students, first-generation students, many, many more students of color. And the institutions that don't do that, they tend to have higher graduation rates because they take very few chances and they are not egalitarian about the way that they admit people. One of the things that we absolutely know from so much research over decades and decades is that income correlates with graduation. So if you're from a higher income family, if your parents went to college, you're more likely to graduate. And so the institutions that enroll higher income students whose parents went to college tend to have high graduation rates.
Sure.
They don't take chances on students. And I admire the institutions that, you know, put their neck out there and educate an entire nation, not just part of it.
And Dr. Freeman, you're nodding your head. I mean, this is a situation that you certainly encounter on a daily basis.
Absolutely.
Is there a typical demo of a young person who's going to go to Coppin State?
I would say no. We look at Coppin is a multi-generational institution, and that's the way we look at our. We may have a grandmother, mother, and son or daughter enrolled at the same time. And so for the community that we serve and the mission of the institution that Fannie Coppin Jackson had initially, we are rooted in that West Baltimore community and serving the students and the families that are there. So
yeah. Generations, boy, that's,
generations.
That's lovely. Just, that brings a tear to the eye.
So
that's terrific.
Yeah, when we talk about retention for us, I agree with President Wilson and Dr. Gassman that it really is a different kind of conversation and a different kind of measurement, a much more qualitative measurement, a much more nuanced measurement of success, what we consider success.
It's Midday on 88.1. I'm Tom Hall. Angeline joins us on the line from Baltimore. Angeline, welcome to the show. Thanks for your call.
Hi. So it's Angeline, sorry.
Oh, but, Angeline, my apologies.
I actually attended Coppin State University. I graduated in 2014, and I actually work for Dr. Freeman as his resident hall director for Denman Hall. And I heard a comment about HBCUs putting you in a bubble, and I wanted to disagree with that. Though I do work for my HBCU now, I've had the opportunity to work for major corporations, do research projects outside of Coppin State. And I tell the residents all the time, Coppin prepared me fully for the real world. And I actually had got my bachelor's degree in health information management. And just the courses that I took, I was able to apply that in the real world. So for those that are looking to go to HBCU, I don't want them to think that they don't prepare them for the real world. I believe that they prepare you way more than anyone else because, you know, it's serving a black population. We have to step up a little bit more. We have to do a little bit more just to be recognized and just to achieve. So Coppin State definitely pushes us towards that.
Well, Angeline, I think you're in the right line of work because you make a case that's a very, very persuasive and compelling case. Thank you so much for your call, and best of luck to you. That's terrific. Dr. Wilson, you serve on the board of the White House Initiative on Historically Black Colleges and Universities. What does that do? This is President Obama appointed you to this. What is that entity taking up? What do they work with?
This initiative actually was started by former President Jimmy Carter, the White House Initiative on HBCUs, and has been in place with every president following President Carter. And so this board is comprised of about 19 to 20 members. We meet four times a year. We look at policy issues impacting HBCUs, and we meet with federal agencies and basically make the case of the need for greater investments on the part of federal agencies in the missions of HBCUs because the products that we produce are critical for this nation to remain competitive long-term. And so those are some of the things that we actually take up. We're having a meeting actually coming up in about a month.
Dr. David Wilson is the president of Morgan State University. Dr. Michael Freeman is the vice president of enrollment and academic affairs at Coppin State University. Dr. Mary Beth Gassman has joined us on the line from New York. She's a professor of higher education and the director of the Penn Center for Minority-Serving Institutions at the University of Pennsylvania. Thank you all for your time today, and I'm just delighted to hear about this upsurge in enrollment at HBCUs, and let's hope that continues. Thanks so much. Appreciate it. It's Midday Friday. I'm Tom Hall. Glad you're with us. The first ever Baltimore Jazz Festival is tomorrow at Druid Hill Park. We've got a preview coming up in just a minute. Stick around.